Hey, my name is Kevin Clark. I'm the host of a new football podcast called Slow News Day. I want to tell you about it. On Mondays, Lindsey Jones and I will recap the weekend in football that was, as well as look ahead to what's next. On Wednesday, the normal Slow News Day, the thing you've been watching for years, current players, current coaches, current analysts talking about the football world. And on Friday, a wild card. Could be some college football, could be more pro stuff. It's a video podcast, so you can watch it on Spotify or listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on Spotify. It's Slow News.
It's the Ringers Philly special presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr. and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Hello, and welcome to the Ringers Philly special. It's the Sixers show. I am Chris Ryan, joined as always by Raheem Palmer. Raheem, what's up, man?
Life is good. I mean, we got another Sixers win. I mean, we absolutely rolling right now. I mean, like, I don't know if you could ask for more as a Sixers fan right now. I mean, we've won six in a row, seven out of the last 10. I mean, we're just doing everything that we need to do right now. So,
honestly, Since the turn of the year, I've just been floating. I can't believe this is life. Like, this is the LeBron meme where he's standing in the pool, staring up the sun, being like, I can't believe this is how it feels. We just keep running off these win streaks, and the Sixers now win the season series with Cleveland. They take that one. They are now third in the Eastern Conference. Boston, I think, is playing right now or was just wrapping up their Minnesota game. But the Sixers are a couple games behind Boston in the Eastern Conference. They currently have the third best net rating, the third best offense, the eighth best defense. That's six in a row on a night where they just did not actually have their best stuff. I think that even that team would admit that. It was kind of a stop-start, very whistle-heavy game. The whistle wound up determining the entire result, I think we could say, and we can get into that big Embiid call reversal. But Raheem, yeah, man, you get to the end of a game like this. Is your takeaway more individual or team-based? Like, are you looking at that being like yet another notch for Embiid in the MVP argument? Clearly going out there, getting his, what did he have? He had
36 and 18.
And four blocks. And that was the thing, man. I got to say, there was points in the game where I was like, the Sixers are phoning it in except for they are getting Embiid his numbers.
You know, it was so interesting because the way they came out to start the game, I was just like, oh, yeah, this is just going to be an easy blowout for the Sixers. And it was just like it felt like they dominated that first quarter.
The first quarter, for sure. Yeah.
But even with them dominating, they had like eight turnovers in the first quarter. And it was just like, all right, if you guys can just stop turning the ball over, this is an easy night for us. And then obviously we know what happened in the second quarter. They continued to turn the ball over. They continued to play sloppy. And Cleveland got it going on offense. And you know, defensively, we just were such a mess, like on a perimeter, that it was just like, all right, LeVert's just having like a career night, you know? And I mean, eventually we slowed him down, but it was like very frustrating to watch in that first half.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some stuff I want to talk about in terms of the Sixers being able to defend on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. The Cavs are a really interesting matchup for them because not only do they have the interior defense, this is a strange game too because Sixers had no McDaniels, Cavs had no Allen, so it wasn't exactly, neither team was at full strength. But I think Mobley, and Embiid was a great matchup to watch all night if you're a fan of just watching these two monsters of the paint kind of check each other out and figure out how to get each other into foul trouble. And speaking of foul trouble, as the game went on, Embiid, who was playing like absolute god-level defense towards the end of the game, starts to get some fouls. He gets his fifth. Sixers come down the floor, about 4 minutes left. Embiid's got the ball, I don't know, like around the foul line area. And he throws an elbow into Mobley's chest. It wasn't like out of the ordinary, but it was contact. Mobley goes flying backwards. Foul call on Embiid. That's it. And it's like the huge momentum swing for the Cavs, because now they get to play crunch time with an Embiid-free Sixers. And then Doc does the finger wave and is like, let's review that. They go to commercial. Doris is like, no way. Doris and Ryan Rocha were like, there's no way they were overturning this, but good for them for challenging it. They come back, they reverse the call. The Cavs never got back into this game, honestly. Like, I think that they were like Bickerstaff spent the rest of the game screaming at the ref. Embiid's cracking up as he's coming back on the floor, and the Sixers kind of walked away with it.
Yeah, I mean, it was so interesting too, because you know that call was huge in many ways, because not only did you know it keep Joel Embiid in the game, we got the bucket. And you know, I don't even think ESPN realized that we got the bucket, because you know it was 108-101, and they left 108-101 on the scoreboard for about four or five possessions almost.
They stopped the game to put the points back on, and it was like while Bickerstaff was still screaming at the ref, they were like, oh, by the way, you're actually down two more than you thought. And he was just like, FML, man, like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, it just, I mean, honestly, I wish the NBA would add, like, I mean, I know it's March Madness right now, I wish the NBA would add a flop warning to the NBA. I mean, just because it's just like, to me, it was obvious that Mobley flopped. I know, you know, Embiid uses elbow, but you don't want to see stuff like that called. I mean, with the game on the line, you want to see the best players decided. You don't want to see guys flopping. So I appreciate the NBA for making the right decision at that point in time. I think, you know, maybe Embiid being an MVP race right now has a lot to do with that, of course. I mean, at some point
do you think the Adam Silver ringtone rang out?
Yeah, I think Adam Silver made the call. I think you got the Vince McMahon thing going, where it's just like you got a guy rolling right now. You're not going to...
One of the MVP favorites with 5 minutes to go on national television, East Coast primetime, man. Come on.
Yeah, especially not on that call. You're just not happening.
I mean, I think that if I was a Cleveland fan, I'd be pretty furious. I will say there were some rinky-dink calls on both sides. It was a quick whistle tonight, a lot of foul shots. But look, like, you're going to have to play all sorts of games in the playoffs. And that was what I liked about this, was that another example of the Sixers being able to get a victory out of, not necessarily a defeat. Like you said, they came out, they looked great in the first quarter. I'm not trying to make it sound like they flipped the switch. But this does lead me to a topic I really wanted to talk to you about. And we haven't really had a chance to like crunch numbers after this game. So the Sixers came out in the second half and they outscored the Cavs 63-49. And in a vacuum, that's impressive. But I don't know about you, but I've noticed that this is like a new characteristic and like a little bit of an identity for this team, is that they have like these really, really, really nice second halves, especially fourth quarters, where against Milwaukee, against Portland, you know, against this Cleveland team tonight, I feel like they have these great late game surges, which is, it's not something I didn't really, I don't really think I associated that kind of attitude and that kind of resiliency with this team before.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at the Celtics game where we kind of melted down in the third quarter.
Yeah, that's a great call.
We were down 10 in the fourth quarter and we made a run and actually took the lead. So, I mean, I think we're seeing a level of resilience that I haven't seen in the entire NBA era. Like, I mean, I just haven't seen it. And, you know, when you look at the numbers, like, I mean, for the second half for the Sixers, like since January 1st, I think we're fifth in net rating in the second half. So it's just like, I mean, we have an offensive rating of like 122, defensive rating of 118. So it's clear that we're playing better in the second half.
That's the thing that, like, I always, you know, you always think about third quarter Warriors. and how like they would come out of the locker room and they'd be down like 8 and then all of a sudden they'd be up 16. That kind of identity is like, to me, championship material. Now, I'm not saying that about the Sixers, but I am saying that like this is a team that in the years past you'd be like, oh, they don't have it tonight, or they blew that lead and Doc doesn't know how to guard a lead. And so for some reason, I just go into every game now pretty much and I'm just like, I think they're going to win. And even if they're down 9 or if they're down 11 or if they're whatever, I'm just like, man, like it's the fourth quarter that matters. I'll be honest, even tonight, I was just like, wait till the fourth quarter.
You know, so interesting. I actually pulled up the numbers for the whole season. In the fourth quarter for the whole season, we're second in net rating at 8.4 for the whole season for the fourth quarter. And then for the second half for the entire year, I think we're third. So there's something to that, you know, observation.
That's the old eye test going for me. What else did you see from this game on the Sixers side? I mean, obviously Embiid was a monster. He had a couple of plays that are like, this is why this guy's a generational talent. The double, there was the one thing where he basically like disrupted Osman's layup and then blocked Mobley's shot on the second jump, like all in like 2 seconds. And you're just like, this guy, like you said before, is probably the greatest Sixer you've ever cheered for.
Yeah, I mean, there was a play in the first half and you could see that they were doubling Joel Embiid. It was right before the end of the half and they doubles him. And it's just like, he's not even handling the double team well. And he still finds a way to like kind of muscle through it and score. And it just was like one of the most incredible plays of the night for me. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And, you know, we were kind of in the midst of, you know, Cleveland was in the midst of a run. So we were trying to like, you know, hold serve. And, you know, I think at one point, it was like 50, it was 55, 54, something like that. And, you know, that was the point to where it's just like, okay, Joel is not going to let us lose tonight. And I felt that at that point in time, even before, you know, anything else happened in the third quarter.
Another really, like, if you could be quiet, a quiet 28-12 for Harden. Just kind of cruising along, played 40 minutes. 9-for-12 from the free throw line, just kind of making sure everything moved accordingly. He was sort of in an existential battle with Cleveland's wings to see who could get under the other person's feet more when they were coming down for three-pointers. And that was kind of weird. I felt like he was both getting some bad calls, but also you get to the end of the night, you're like, how this dude just put up 28? And we spent a lot of time in January really sweating Daryl Morey about like, who are you going to add for depth? Who are you going to add on the bench? Did you get enough back for Thybulle? Should you have traded Thybulle? All these questions about like, oh, we're not reloading. And then you look around in the buyout market and this guy's going here. Reggie Jackson went to Denver. And what about this? And then you get to the end of the year and you're like, man, it's pretty cool having like three awesome players every night. And it really is obvious that that's what's going to make the difference is whether or not Harden and Embiid are playing like this.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I was watching the Bucks last night and it was just like, all right, this Bucks team is scary. And it almost feels like we're going to need Joel and Harden to be Shaq and Kobe. But it's like the one thing I'll say about Harden this year, it feels like he makes every single timely three. You know, we were down, it was 96-95 with 7 minutes and 51 seconds to go. And Harden makes the step back three. And from there, we had the lead for the rest of the game. And it just feels like every single moment that you need Harden to make one of those timely threes or timely baskets or timely assists, he's done it this year. And I don't know if you could ask for more from what we've gotten from Harden. And I think we get that in the playoffs, then, you know, the sky's the limit.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Yeah, so, I mean, Maxey with another nice game. He ends with 23. And then we didn't really get much from Harris, basically nothing from Tucker. He had 5 points, 6 boards. Tobias was 2 for 7 tonight, 7 points. And there were like long stretches where I was like, oh yeah, Tobias is out there. You know, like I just really not noticing him. It was a very big three oriented night. Is that?
Yeah, I think the one time I noticed him was when he got the tech. Yeah, like he was like really frustrated because I mean he clearly got fouled, but yeah, it was just was like his,
that was his first tech of the year.
Yeah. I feel like Tobias hasn't been himself lately.
Do you think like, that has to do with the reemergence of Maxi?
I'm wondering if he's a little banged up. Mm. Like, if you look at, you know, what he's done since the Milwaukee game, and he actually got hurt in that game, and we had to close with Jaden, versus what he's done before, I'm seeing a different player.
Yeah, it's 10 points, 8 points, 11 points, 7 points. And he's
shooting 30% from the field.
And he's playing around 30. Yeah. I mean, like in two games where he played like 25 minutes. Yeah. So it's not exactly the same guy that we're used to, for sure.
Yeah. I just get the sense that he's playing through an injury. And I'm wondering, you know, we talk a lot about how we want to keep Joel Embiid healthy. We want to keep James Harden healthy. Well, Tobias is our best wing. Yeah. And we're going to need him for the playoffs. So I think at some point, you know, maybe play, you know, maybe rest Tobias at times, you know, see what we have with Jaden because we're going to need him too. So he's clearly not the same guy though.
Yeah. McDaniels hurt tonight. Not much from D'Anthony Melton, who had no points. And then we got a big boost from Niang, honestly. Some really timely threes. It's kind of interesting that he has become Doc's go-to like bench offensive like Vinnie Johnson guy, like it's you know him and Milton, but mostly Niang.
Yeah, I mean, and Milton was huge tonight too. I mean, Milton had 11 points. I mean, he hit some timely baskets, timely threes. I mean, he was 3 for 3 from behind the arc. So this team is deeper than you know what a lot of people thought they would be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the balance of Harden and Maxi and like just like that kind of playmaking that we need, whether it's getting into the paint or getting penetration or be able to score from the perimeter, but also setting up the other guys. Cause you can tell there's just a marked difference when it's like the Embiid off on numbers are probably more significant, but I feel like the Harden on off numbers have more of an impact on the other guys.
Interesting. Elaborate that on that a little more.
So without looking at like Harden's on off numbers, I feel like we don't really have anyone in his zip code of like competent offense running, you know, where it's like, don't worry, I will reset. Don't worry, I know how to throw an entry pass to Embiid. Don't worry, I will make that drive and kick and find the right guy. Sadly, sometimes he seems to overly find PJ Tucker in the corner, but that's a story for another day. I just think that like he has like a mastery of like the offense that Doc is running, which is essentially like the Harden offense, but with a God level center on it, that I just think that like no one else in this team really has right now.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think he's made strides in terms of his playmaking, but I mean, he's not there yet. I think we saw that earlier in the year, and now he doesn't have to be that. I mean, because Harden's out there, so I totally agree. I mean, you know, James Harden's been one of the best playmaking guards in the league since. I mean, he's become a starter. So
yeah.
There's no way to replace what he brings to the table at all.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that sometimes I'm like, oh, man, it would be cool to have the George Hill type dude out there. But honestly, like the way this team is constructed and the way this team has been playing, it seems like it's really hard to criticize. It's really hard to nitpick.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's the only thing that you can nitpick that I wish this team had was I just wish we had more wings. Now, not everybody can be the Celtics. Not everybody can be the Clippers. But that's the one thing that I wish, or I mean, not everybody can be the Brooklyn Nets at this point. That's the one thing I wish we had. I think that's the thing that's the only thing holding us back right now.
And that's like anything. when you look at the bench and you see Deadman and Harrell down there at the other end, you're just kind of like, man, that would have been nice to have a wing somewhere there.
Yeah, I mean, but that's also like the hardest position to find. Like everybody needs wings. So it's just like, it's not like they grow on trees.
okay. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about this Cavs team, because we, you know, one of the kind of cool things about doing this podcast is that you kind of get to view the league through the prism of them playing the Sixers, but we don't often spend a lot of time other than like kind of like bagging on the Heat or whatever. We don't spend a lot of time talking about these other teams. I've been very, very interested in this Cavs team. They're obviously maybe a year ahead of schedule. And it's just been fascinating to like watch Mobley do this late season push, because I think some people were like selling Mobley stock early in the season when it didn't seem like his offense was taking another step. But now you're seeing like the dudes losing it and calling him Tim Duncan 2 out there.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Cavs. I mean, in all likelihood, if the season ended today or if this, you know, the seedings stay as they are, I don't think the Sixers will play the Cavs in the playoffs. But I thought it would be useful to talk about like some of the problems that the Cavs present the Sixers. So okay. Let's talk a little bit about what you saw with Mobley and Embiid tonight, because I loved it, because Embiid is obviously, he's this incredible combination of brute strength and delicate touch, right? Like he's this ballerina at 7'2" who can hit fadeaway Dirk jumpers and threes and go up and under. But then Mobley, who's this lean, kind of like very efficient player, it's hard to knock him, even though Embiid took him out tonight. Like, I thought Mobley had a decent game.
Yeah, I think Mobley had a decent game, but you know, every time I watch the Cavs versus the Sixers, I always leave thinking that as good as Mobley is, him and Allen are just over. Like, I mean, Embiid is just over. Like, he overmatches them. Like,
yeah,
and I just they're just not big enough, and they just don't have the force, and they just don't have it to be able to defend Embiid. And I leave like so. I gave like on my I went on a radio show today and I gave out the Sixers today -2.5. I put it into the Action app. I just felt like the Sixers, to me, this is a matchup that I like, just because I just don't think they have an answer for Embiid at all. And you know, Mobley is solid. He's a great defensive player, but I just think Embiid's size just presents a huge problem.
It was kind of awesome to see. I don't know how many times it happened, but if it was definitely more than once or twice where Mobley broke up. Or sorry, Embiid broke up the alley-oops that the Cavs were trying to get, where they would try to get Embiid away from the rim and then roll Mobley or whoever to the rim hard and throw a little like lob to him, and then Embiid would just knock it out of the sky. Because I feel like that's become like one of the go-to plays in the NBA is the sort of P&R and then just toss it up there for the big man to flush. And you just can't do that on Embiid.
Yeah, I mean, there was periods in the second quarter, and you know, the announcers actually commented on it, where it's just like guys got into the lane, and you saw they just didn't want to shoot because Embiid is down there. Or you know, there was the play where you know Mobley tried to dunk it, and Embiid blocked it. In the fourth quarter, I think it was the one with we were up 5, and Embiid just blocked the dunk, and then Harden goes down and gets the layup. So I just think, to me, it's just like as good as Cleveland's front line is, it's neutralized against what we bring to the table.
So the one bit of concern trolling that I had for this game is obviously LeVert goes off. Mitchell looked like he was dealing with a hurt finger for most of the night. Garland had spurts. And what Cleveland does to you is Cleveland puts an incredible amount of pressure on that point of attack defender and that perimeter defense, right?
Yeah.
Honestly, like over this last 15 games, especially since maybe like the turn of the year, I can live with bad defense when we're putting up 122.5 points a game, per 100 or whatever. Like, it's just this offense is so devastating that like I feel like they can get stops when they need to. But what did you think of the Sixers perimeter defense and what like tonight said about where we're at?
I mean, I think, you know, for large stretches of this game, it was pretty awful. Like, it just wasn't enjoyable to watch. And it just felt like, you know, LeVert got whatever he wanted. But I also felt like, you know, for large stretches of this game, Cleveland shot a little bit over their head. It just felt like they were kind of making everything. Like, you know, like LeVert was just making, you know, threes off the dribble. And I'm not expecting that all the time. I mean, you know, the Cavs are 12th in three-point field goal percentage, but I just didn't get the sense that, you know, we're going to see LeVert making all these threes. Like, I just, like, at the end of the first half, it was just like, what the hell? But, You know, I think the thing that frustrated me more than the perimeter defense was kind of like the lack of hustle. There was a ton of offensive rebounds that the Cavs got. There was one, you know, right before the half where we're down one, and I think Niang might have tipped it, and then, you know,
he tipped it right to the Cavs player.
Yeah, to Osman. Yeah, and Osman hits a three. You know, stuff like that was kind of frustrating. It seemed like they got a lot of second chance baskets. I think if we eliminate that, and I think if we eliminate the turnovers, I think those are the things that, you know, concern me more than the perimeter defense, because it felt like our offense fed their offense for, you know, quite some time in this game.
Would you want to play with a dude like LeVert? Like, as soon as he gets 4 points, it's just like between the legs for 8 seconds at the top of the key, and you're just like, dude, Garland is standing right there.
I mean, not at all. I mean, at the end of the day, I think LeVert is one of those guys who's like better in theory than he is in reality. And it's like you see him in Brooklyn, and it's a young, exciting team with no expectations. But then you see him in other places where there's expectations and there are better players around him, and you just don't like what he brings to the table despite all his talent.
Yeah, he's a weird dude. He's kind of like one of these cats who's gotten a 50-point night on his resume. And like, so I'm always like, oh, LeVert, or oh, Sadiq Bey, or whoever. And it's just like, it just seems like he's not playing within a team offense. He either has it going that night and he's going to go for 30, or he's going to get 8 and probably get yanked in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, I think that's the thing that's going to ultimately hurt the Cavs. I think they just need better wings. Like, I mean, we all love what Mobley brings to the table. We love Jared Allen. We love Donovan Mitchell. We love Garland. But I just think that wing, what they bring at the wings right now, just needs some work. And I think they're a wing away from truly making being a contender.
Yeah, they feel a year ahead of schedule, so they'll probably, I mean, if the season ended today and you know, Boston won tonight and the Bucks are cruising, they've won their last two, so even though the Sixers are surging and have the Celtics within touching distance, I feel like there's some obvious breathing room between the Sixers and the Cavs, and then the Cavs and the Knicks, so things are starting to settle in. The Nets, every time I think the Nets are going to go into a free fall, they win 3 in a row. So right now you've got a playoff situation where the Sixers play the Nets in the first round. You've got a chance to see them since they've kind of stabilized with this new all wings assortment of guys.
I have seen them. And I think the one thing that's like, when I think of this Nets team, it's like, I feel like when I'm watching Mikal Bridges, I don't want to, like, I asked Bill this in one of our chats. I'm like, is Mikal going to make, like, a Kawhi-esque leap? And maybe Kawhi is a stretch, but I've never seen Mikal Bridges, like, perform offensively the way he's doing in Brooklyn right now.
This is the big thing, man. It's like, how many dudes out there are just a usage rate away from being, like, 28-point-a-game players right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just didn't see it coming. Like, it's honestly shocking. We've always loved Mikal Bridges. Obviously, we wished he would be a Sixer if it wasn't for Brett Brown and Elton Brand trading him away. But it was just like, to see what he's become in Brooklyn. I mean, he's at 26 points a game on 50% shooting. Like, I don't think anybody could have predicted that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's obviously, it does not seem like Ben Simmons is going to play basketball again this year, but it's hard for me to believe that he would come back for a Sixers first round playoff series. I think that Nets team is frisky. Like, I think that they could take a game or two off the Sixers, but you know, that's looking like what that first round matchup is going to be. And then on the other hand, the Cavs would get the Knicks in the first round, and then they would get the winner of Bucks versus the play-in winner, or one of the play-in teams to come in eighth.
Yeah, I think this would be the 2018 series. I think Brooklyn actually beat us game one in that series.
Yeah, that was the D'Angelo Russell, Spencer Dinwiddie. Yeah, yeah.
And then, I mean, they beat us game one and we got the backdoor sweep. So it would probably be reminiscent of that. But I don't see them beating us at all.
No, me neither. Is there anything else from the Cavs game that you want to hit before we get going?
I don't know if there's anything else. I just think, you know, That third quarter where we had the 13-0 run, I mean, we were down, what were we down, 70-57, and we just, I mean, reeled off 14 straight points. That, I mean, that said a lot about this team. So I want to give a kudos there, because I was like ready to go on a rant because I was like really frustrated. I'm like, these are the game. And you heard the announcer saying it. It's just like, yo, these are the games to where you feel like, okay, we want to trust the Sixers. We're buying in. But then they put up a game like this. And then as soon as Dora said that, we go on a 14-0 run. So
I'm a believer, man.
I am a believer.
I'm a believer, and you know, this will be an interesting week because, like I said, Harden played 40 tonight. You know, like Embiid played 38. It was a pretty close game until the very end. But you look at this schedule coming up, and we've talked about this a bunch. So, Charlotte Friday, Indiana on the back to back in Indy on Saturday, Sunday off. Then they go Monday Chicago and Philly, and then they travel to Chicago on Wednesday for that. The second of the sort of home and home there. Then they go home, they get that Thursday off, and then it's a bunch of amazing and nationally televised games in a row where it's Golden State on the 24th, Phoenix on the 25th, the Super Bowl in Denver on the 27th with Embiid versus Jokic on MVP. It basically is. And then 2 days later, they go Dallas at home, Toronto at home, at Milwaukee, Boston at home, Miami at home, at Atlanta, and at Brooklyn.
I mean, at this point, is, you know, the Nuggets versus the Sixers, is that like the NFC championship game? And, you know, the Bucks versus the Sixers on April 2nd, that might be the Super Bowl.
If they keep going at this clip and this conversation still doesn't go anywhere, because it doesn't really feel like it is. I mean, all respect to the NCAA tournament, I don't know if it's on that Monday. I think, won't they be off on Monday night by that point?
That's a Sunday, actually. Matter of fact, that is a Monday. That's a Monday on against like the 24th, Nuggets.
Right? Yeah.
The 27th. I think they might be off on that day. Yeah.
So it's like, I'm kind of surprised that they can't flex that off of NBA TV. Maybe they have to have it there, but like that is going to be one of the most watched regular season games of the season. If both Embiid and Jokic play and they're still doing this and there's still people screaming at each other about this on First Take, dude, I mean, like, that could literally decide the MVP. There are people who have said as much.
Yeah, I always think back to, you know, when Russell Westbrook won the MVP and Russell hit the shot against Denver. It's like those late season matchups, they matter and what you do. So, you know, I think Bill has already said, like, you know, last week he said on Twitter, it's just like, yo, we got to see some more basketball. And, you know, right now Giannis is playing out of his mind. You know, I think the conversation has been mostly Jokic versus Embiid.
I know.
But I think
meanwhile, Giannis is on the best player on the best team and is killing everybody. I know.
Yeah, like they've won other than the time that we beat them, of course. I think they've won they've won 18 out of the last 20 games. And obviously Giannis didn't play the game against the Warriors, so this is going to be fun a couple weeks. Because Embiid is showing no signs of slowing down.
So we'll be in and around. We'll do a pod next week. These are some pretty sleepy games, and I hope the Sixers do just keep everything healthy. But expect a lot of podcasting once that Golden State, Phoenix, Denver run starts. So we'll be around a lot. Sheil will be around a lot. I got to go see if Cliff, you got to go wake Sheil up because Darius Slay is coming back.
Slay is coming back. We are podding tomorrow morning. Friday or Thursday morning about Darius Slay coming back to the Birds. And also, I just got word that Joel Embiid is now the MVP favorite on FanDuel.
Woo!
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, what a time to be alive.
Hang on. Let me get you guys the numbers real quick. I believe what I just saw on
the It's app. Actually, Embiid is minus 105. Yeah, and Jokic is plus 170.
Yes, yes. So there we go.
Giannis is actually plus 350. You know, if you guys listen to the East Coast Bias podcast, Joe House, he said take Joel Embiid plus 220. I actually said, you know, you should hedge that with some Giannis at plus 700. And, you know, right away, those numbers have moved. So that's why you got to check out the East Coast Bias podcast. Myself, John Jaskrzemski, Joe House. We always kind of have that.
It's a must listen. It's a must listen.
Yeah.
And if you listen to those guys, you would have made yourself a little bit of money on this Joel Embiid thing, because I feel like the momentum is really rolling downhill right now. Thanks, as always, to Cliff Augustine for producing us. And stay tuned for Sheil and Ben to get all your Darius Slay takes tomorrow.
You know what's so crazy? You guys got Bradbury back. And that was like, you know, last week,
you know, looking like, I try not to ask you about Eagle stuff because I can't take it when you say you guys and you're on a Philly sports pod. Why don't you cry more about Zeke, dude?
Oh, my God. But you know what, though? It was like I was telling somebody, like, after the Eagles lost Hargrave, I'm like, the Eagles are going to have to win with their offense, because it was feeling like, I mean, you lose Gardner, you lose Hargrave. It felt like the Eagles were going to lose Bradbury and Slay. It felt like, all right, this team is just going to win with their offense. And then Bradbury agrees to come back. Slay is coming back. So it looks like they're bringing most of this core back. So,
and we got that pick. We're going to get another Georgia dude in the draft. Watch out, man. We're going right back for it.
Yeah. Like, honestly, the Eagles are going to probably win the NFC again. The NFC East again.
Cliff, doesn't that sound great hearing that?
Man, I love to hear that. I love to hear a Cowboys fan. Yeah, but guess what? They got Gilmore and y'all signed Van Der Esch back, and looks like Zeke is going to be out.
Van Der Esch can't stay healthy. Like, I love him, but it's just like at the end of the day, it's like if you can't stay on the field, then what does it matter? I do like the Gilmore addition, I think, but it's just, I mean, he has like a Pro Football Focus grade of like 81, but I always wonder, you know, is he washed at this point? He's going to have to really be the guy because, I mean, Diggs, he gets his interceptions, but he's not really the cornerback that you want, you know, really.
Cliff, man, did you have a mute button or something? What are you doing to this dude?
Bro, I'm gonna get killed on Twitter for letting this was Cowboys talk on a Philly pod.
The crazy thing is I said all positive stuff about the Eagles, and I've said negative stuff about the Cowboys.
But so I can't handle it when you're like, you guys got Darius.
There's not one Philadelphian that will positively talk about the Cowboys. We all hate the Cowboys. It's in our blood. It's in our
and you're in Philly.
Me green. You're the only one who's recording in Philly right now. That's the craziest part.
That is crazy. Like, that is crazy.
Me and Chris not even in Philly right at the moment right now, and you're the only one in Philly with a Philly's jersey in the background talking about the Cowboys. Like, that's insane to me, man.
I'm sorry.
It's crazy.
I wish I had became an Eagles fan. I just did.
And Cliff, it would honestly be a hilarious bit if you just bleeped out Raheem, his whole thing about the Cowboys. And it was like, what a Raheem.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you can cut this out. You can cut this part out.
No. We are keeping this.
We keeping this in here.
But maybe you should just play like sad trumpet music in the background. Like,
I got to find the sad music.
We were produced, as always, by Cliff Augustine. Stay tuned for Ben and Shield tomorrow. Thanks for listening to us on a late night with the Cavs going down to the Sixers. It's all happening. Talk to you guys soon.